This is a Care Chronicles podcast episode with your host, Trisha Coyote. You're listening to the Care Chronicles, a podcast about self-care, healthcare, and everything in between. I'm your host, Trisha Coyote. I'm a board-certified music therapist, and I'm currently pursuing my master's degree in mental health counseling. I'm also a creative, multi-passionate, nature-loving, many-water sign forever student. Join me and guests on the show as we explore how we take care of ourselves and each other. Welcome back to the Care Chronicles. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for choosing to spend your time with me over on this show, on this little corner of the internet. I know that the frequency of episodes from this podcast has really changed over the years, but I am even more grateful for those of you who are still sticking around, still staying up to date on when new episodes do come out and tuning in. If you're not subscribed to the show already, please do that so that you don't miss our more sporadic releases of episodes over here. So today we're going to be talking, or I'm going to be talking, about the clinical application of silence. So this is more of a clinician-based episode, but certainly food for thought for anyone listening. And although I am talking about using silence in my group music therapy sessions, specifically my most recent experiment with this, I am not necessarily talking about silence within the music. There are tons of ways to apply silence within the actual musicking of a session. But today I'm talking about silence in general. So this is something that I tried out for the first time a couple years ago. I started a session. It was a very small group. I had some instruments. I didn't really have a fully fleshed out plan or expectation for the session. My goal was to just go in with the instruments and let the clients, and I will say students because I was in a school setting, let the students really dictate what they wanted to do, how they wanted to utilize the instruments, how they wanted to engage during our time together, and just give them options and let them take the reins. And so I frequently, in any given day, will pause when perhaps like directions are being sought or students look to me ready to hear whatever's coming next, or just pausing and using silence as a way to get people's attention. There is a statistic that I don't know off the top of my head, but it is a very large amount, so we'll say over 50% at least, of the interaction or communication that most children and students get is directions. So that's instructions from the facilitator, directive statements of things to do or not do, redirections on behavior. And as someone who works in a school setting, I can definitely say that I see that. I see that a lot of the interactions students get are directive statements. And I certainly am guilty of that, not to say that they're not important and don't have their place, but and it's great to foster an environment where the students don't have to experience constant directions. So I digress. In this session with my students, there was a moment where we all had instruments, we were all sitting in a circle, and they kind of looked to me, and this was a few years ago, but one of them might have even asked, like, okay, what do we do next? Or what do you want us to do? Kind of a thing. And I kind of just like smiled at him and raised my eyebrows. And the response from the students gave me this inspiration to stick with staying silent and really commit to it. So the students were a little uncomfortable, and then they started doing this guessing game for like, if we do this, will Miss Coyote react in, you know, such a way? Is this like a guessing game that we have to try and figure out what she wants us to do? And so what I noticed was, over the course of that session, the students were so engaged in the activity. It wasn't anything I had to plan or try to be entertaining and engaging and keep their attention. They were doing it all on their own. They were working together as a group. They were really dictating whatever the activity was based on their interests and what was inspiring or engaging to them at the time. And there were no behavioral redirections. There was never a time where I felt like I had to use my voice to say, please stop, you're being unsafe, you're being unkind, you're being disrespectful, you're not using the equipment correctly. Things that usually kind of just have to come out all the time were unnecessary in this session. And it was really just a beautiful experiment, I think, for the students and for myself. I didn't tell them I was going to do that. I didn't even know I was going to do that. It was just something that inspiration struck, and I went with it, and it was a beautiful moment. And the other staff who were also present for that session really got a lot out of it. They thought, you know, this is really cool. It was amazing to see the students work together that way. I never would have tried such a thing, but it went so wonderfully. And at the time I thought, wow, like, what a beautiful moment. What a success. Maybe this will come up again someday in the future, but certainly isn't something I think I could plan for. So that was a few years ago. Last week, during a day full of music therapy sessions, groups specifically, the inspiration struck me again. And on my second group of the day, I had, again, everyone had instruments. We were sitting in a circle. I also had set up the set of colored cups that we use to create different rhythms. The colors are just an adaptation for the students who aren't familiar with music notation. And this is an activity we'd been building on for the previous couple weeks. And so in the second session, I just got inspired to, instead of telling the students what I had planned or even trying to guide them super heavily, I just kind of stood up from the circle and moved the cups. They were on a music stand. I moved them closer, and then I just stood there and let them work out what they were going to do for the rest of our session. So again, doing this, I really commit to it. I know that I am not going to speak unless there is a safety concern. I am not really going to give them any gestures or indications for necessarily what I want, again, unless there's a safety concern. So really just letting myself, as much as I can, be part of the group, be a follower for wherever they want to lead the session. And so some different things I saw throughout the day, I stood up, I put the cups out, everyone had their instruments, and I just stood there. Some students would, you know, they'd kind of look at us funny. Some students would raise their hands, which ironically is something I am always asking my students to do. They will all be talking or yelling out, and I will say to them, guys, I love the excitement, but I can only listen to one of you at a time. Will you please raise your hands? Well, without giving any statements and just standing there silently, students raised their hands. And everyone else was quiet. They would raise their hands and wait expectantly for me to call on them. And I didn't. So then there's a little bit of fear. You can see some of them working through. Like, okay, I know I'm not supposed to call out in this class. That makes me intimidated to perhaps get out of my chair and do the thing I think Miss Coyote is waiting for. Some students would be really bold and go for that. Some of them were very fearful that they would be redirected, and so they were not willing to take that risk. I saw groups where students supported each other and would say, yeah, go for it, or you take a turn, or let's try this. Some of them, or actually one group in particular, none of them felt confident enough to approach me and the cups, but instead they just called out a series of colors. And at that point, we'd all kind of just been sitting in the uncomfortableness and the silence, trying to problem solve for a few minutes. And so I threw them a bone, and I did put the cups in that order that they called out. And from there, they were able to take that rhythm and use it in the same way we had been building up for the past couple weeks. So the particular activity that we had been doing previously, where was a student would make a rhythm and then we would pass that rhythm around the group. So someone would start, say it was ta ta ti ti ta, and the next person would play ta ta ti ti ta, and it would go all the way around. And all of the groups last week ended up redoing that activity on their own. So once someone was confident enough to come up to the cups, to make a rhythm, to start the passing, then usually we'd get to a point where the rhythm would go around the circle several times. I was just sitting in the circle being part of that. Usually, and in previous sessions, I would be the person to stop the rhythm and then prompt the group or prompt someone else to come make a new rhythm. But I wasn't doing that. And so invariably, someone would say, gosh, this is boring, or are we ever going to change this, or something to that effect. And I wouldn't necessarily engage with that, but I would allow the group to decide, oh, you're right, let's change the rhythm. And sometimes, again, there was a little bit of fear, a little bit of uncertainty, you know, we didn't get that direction. Maybe I would get a redirection, or a staff would ask me not to do this thing. The students really had to try and take a risk. So mostly someone else would make a rhythm. It was interesting to see in different groups, some kind of created a, they really worked together to create a pattern where, you know, they took turns to create a rhythm and order. The person who made the new rhythm would start the passing. Some groups always started the rhythm with the same person, perhaps someone who was a little bit more rhythmically accurate without my example, which I usually provided. Some groups were very collaborative, working together. Some groups had natural leaders and some followers, and some groups had multiple people who were really battling for that leadership role. And again, there was never a concern of safety or disrespect or students being unkind to each other. So I really let the groups figure that out on their own. And for the most part, the results were magical. Again, just like the first time I tried this, the students were more engaged than I've ever seen them because they had to take ownership of the entire music therapy session. I wasn't trying to grab their focus on over and over and over as their attention slipped. They were naturally engaged in what they were doing. They got to dictate how the session was run. They got to try things without the fear of, we'll say, being yelled at or being redirected, because I wasn't giving any directions at all. They got to be kind of experimental in what they were doing, and they had to figure things out as a group without the facilitation of a staff member. So some really wonderful things happened throughout the day, and perhaps the most successful and unexpected was with a particular high school group that previously I just really had a lot of trouble with. The students were really, we have a lot of new students in that group. They're really pushing limits. They're wanting to see what the boundaries are. A lot of them have frustration with my expectations, and that I hold them accountable for that. So things like raising our hand instead of calling out, waiting turns, those who choose not to participate, I still like to leave space or try to keep them as included in the group as possible. So a lot of them were kind of struggling with these things, and many of them weren't even able to stay for full sessions. They were either leaving on their own accord or being asked to leave based on their conduct. So this was a very challenging group and a very large group compared to most of the ones I see. And They were in the middle of my day, and by then I had done this silence experiment several times, and I thought, it's going well so far, I might as well commit to it with the knowledge that I cannot be attached to the outcome. If I am committing to this experiment, it might work beautifully like it has so far today, and that would be amazing, or it might completely derail because the students have no idea what's going on and it's completely unfamiliar to them. And I need to just be okay with either outcome and ready to clean up the pieces and manage either outcome that happens. So having that detachment myself, I think, helped a lot because it removed some of the pressure for me to make sure that this session was better than the previous few weeks. And, you know, usually I'm thinking of all the things I can do and all the things I can control to try and set everyone up for success. And by saying today I'm just going to commit to silence, I removed all of that from myself. And the beauty of it was that it removed all of those things from my students. And so for this particular group, everyone stayed for the entire session. There were no redirections for me, perhaps a couple by other support staff who were aware of interactions I missed along the way, just based on the size of the group. And at the end, the student feedback, completely unprompted, was, "I never understood why you were so strict until now." Or, "I used to really not like XYZ, but now I understand why you do this." Or just different things to that effect, where they used to feel resistance or anger or frustration with coming to music therapy and participating in how I facilitated the group and the expectations I had of them. And so when all of that was removed, they got to take ownership of those things and say, "No one's asking me to raise my hand," or, "No one's asking me to play this instrument that I really don't want to. No one's telling me I need to sit here. So now it's my choice. Now I get to work together with my fellow students and have some fun for the next half hour. Now I get to try something and take a risk without immediately having a staff member tell me no." So it was really a beautiful, beautiful experience that, again, I had not prompted or expected any feedback from them, but the insights this particular group, these students had about their appreciation for having clear expectations, now that they've experienced the exact opposite, was incredibly reflective and insightful, and an important lesson that I had not even intended on teaching them. So, all of this to say, silence is an incredible therapeutic tool, as is using our voice and using our words for encouragement, empowerment, appropriate redirection, expectation setting with clarity. And if we have, in my opinion, consistently used our voice to do all those things, when we choose silence, our students and our clients will fill in the blank. We have already created an environment where they know what to do, and we're allowing them to apply that knowledge and maintain those expectations. And for our clients who engage in oppositional behaviors, it's really hard to be oppositional when there are no directions being given. And so they will usually default to curiosity and intrinsic motivation to engage in whatever is in front of them. At least that's been my experience. I certainly know that trying this out on any other given day could have had exactly the opposite results, and my group could have completely derailed, or the students might not have collaborated well. So many things could have gone differently. But if you are in a position where you've tried so many things, and this is something you haven't tried, when the inspiration strikes, I challenge you to apply and experiment with silence and see where it takes you and where it takes your groups and where it takes the whole experience. My advice is to detach from the outcome. Again, the results could be amazing and beautiful and more than you ever even expected. Or it could completely derail a group, in which case you get to practice regrouping. Also, commit to the process. It's uncomfortable to have a whole group of people looking at you when you have decided to not really engage with them. When you've decided, I'm usually the leader and I'm the follower now, but I'm not going to tell anyone that. I'm going to see what happens when I step out, when I step down from that. Perhaps you could, if you feel more inclined, tell your groups, today I'm going to try not talking in our session and see what happens. I haven't tried that myself, but I can certainly say that committing to the process is very important. You'll certainly learn a lot about your group's dynamics, the interpretations they make of you, and the things they've picked up on along the way. An example of that is I had one group where my students knew verbatim exactly what I would say, exactly the step-by-step I would do next. So, for example, they would say, well, first she would have us do the cups, and then she would count us in for anyone who wants to try the rhythm. And then she would say this, and we would all play it together once. Then she would give us an example. They knew that, and they knew the exact words I would usually say, as if it were a script in front of them. So you might be surprised by how much they've been paying attention when it really seems like they haven't. Anyway, so yeah. Detach from the outcome, commit to the experiment, and if possible, enjoy it. Enjoy being able to facilitate without having to be so active in the process, being able to observe it along the way instead of lead it. If you are going to try or have tried this before, please let me know. I'd love to hear what your experience has been. I'm also curious if anyone would use this in a different type of therapeutic session. I'm obviously talking about this from a music therapy perspective. And again, silence within the music is a whole other thing with its own applications. But in an OT group, would anyone try this? In even a speech group, would someone try this? Or maybe group counseling? Is there another setting where stepping down from that leadership role is possible? I'm really curious to hear more and wonder if this works for anyone else. Thank you for listening to my story today. I hope that you learned something, got something out of it, and are maybe feeling inspired to try something new. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening, for making time to be here today. And until next time, take care of yourselves and take care of each other.